Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, they have a great club, as we do. It's interesting. It's going to be interesting with Alex and AJ managing against one another. They're strong at every spot. They got a great starting rotation. Their bullpen's good. They score runs. Are good defensively. Very similar to our club. So it'll be one where it'll be a real interesting series. And we played them tough. I think they won 4-3 during the regular season. As far as the series is concerned, we have the extra home. We have home field advantage this time. I know they play well on the road, but we'll be ready. We'll be ready. It'll be fun.
Upbeat and positive. Dave Dombrowski right there. It is Sports Radio, WEI, final hour of late night, hour number 4 here. Room for you guys at 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter, at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. And, you know, Dombrowski's right. This is a very talented opponent that the Red Sox are going up against. And you know, the season series was close between these two. And that's why I feel like we talked about this earlier in the show. This is why the home field matters so much. And that's one of the reasons why this decision to start David Price in game 2 is a bit of a curious decision. You know, I understand the reasons why. I do. I understand why they want to throw him at home. I understand why Cora is doing what he is doing. However, the Red Sox don't have this position of luxury, really, against this Astros team. It's not like they're an overwhelming favorite. And the question really becomes, does David Price give the Red Sox their best opportunity, their best chance to win game 2? Or does a guy like Nathan Eovaldi, does he give the Red Sox a better chance to win game 2? Does Rick Porcello give the Sox a better chance to win game 2? Clearly, Alex Cora feels like their best opportunity, their best chance to win this game is with David Price. I don't necessarily see it baseball-wise. You know, you look at his track record, 0-10 as a starter in the playoffs, it doesn't exactly make me feel all that confident about his ability to come back and do this thing, right? However, you could flip that around and say, you know, he had a great stretch this year, which wasn't all that long ago. It's not like his great 10-game stretch was all the way back to start the season. No, he got better as the season went along. And it was post-All-Star break that he really flourished. It was post-All-Star break that we saw the best from David Price. And if you take what Dombrowski's saying there about this Astros team being a very good opponent, this Astros team being somebody that the Red Sox match up well with, and then you combine that with what Cora said a little bit earlier in the program when he talked about David Price and the fact that Cora thinks he found something in Price's delivery. He feels like there's a little tweak that Price could make that will return David Price not only to being a respectable pitcher, somebody that, you know, at least the Astros have to worry about a little bit. No, Cora didn't mince his words. He came out and he said, no, he found a little thing, a little tweak that Price can make that will return David Price to the version of David Price that was the best version of David Price that we have seen since he joined the Boston Red Sox. And that's that 10-game stretch post-All-Star break where he was as dominant as any starting pitcher in all of Major League Baseball. And that's not an exaggeration. That is not a homer take. The numbers back that up. For a 7-game stretch, he had a 1.64 ERA. He was averaging about 9 strikeouts per performance. He was that good. He was that nasty. He wasn't walking guys. Great command. The fastball was trending back up in the direction of 94 to 96 instead of 91-92. He was great during that stretch. So if there really is this little tweak, this minor move, this little adjustment that Cora thinks that he's found in Price's delivery, that Cora's not going to tell us, of course. He said he'll tell us after Price's game 2 performance. You know, I don't know if I buy it, though. You know, and again, when we talk about everything that Cora did right in that series against the Yankees, we gave him so much credit. The first hour of the program, you know, one of the things that I said about Cora that I really believe is that, you know, he's never caught looking ahead. And I love that about him. He's only concerned about winning the game at hand. And the evidence was right there, and that's exactly why, you know, he brought Porcello out of the bullpen, and that's why he brought Chris Sale out of the bullpen, because he only cared about winning that game, and I feel like that's the right approach, especially right now. For this Red Sox team, they don't have to worry about tomorrow. There's no sense in worrying about tomorrow if you're never going to get there. And I feel like that attitude, that way of approaching the playoffs, works. You know, I feel like a lot of these managers get stuck in their own heads sometimes. I feel like a lot of these managers want to outsmart everybody. And that's not what Cora is trying to do. He's brought this thing back down to basics, and he wants to win the game at hand. And I gave him so much credit for doing that in the Yankee series, because it takes balls to do that. It does. It takes balls to take Chris Sale and pitch him out of the bullpen, full well knowing that you could still lose that game. And then what happens? Can Chris Sale go in Game 5 on Thursday? I don't know. Does that mean you're forcing David Price to pitch a Game 5 deciding game, a win-or-go-home type game? Is that a very smart decision? I don't think it is. I really don't. I mean, if he can't handle the pressure of a regular season game against the Yankees, if he can't handle the pressure of a playoff game in a non-win-or-go-home situation against the Yankees, how do you expect him to perform in a situation where it is win-or-go-home against the Yankees, especially following up that abysmal Game 2 performance? Can't do it. You cannot do it. Alex Cora knows all of this, but he didn't care. Alex Cora didn't care, because he only cared about winning the game at hand. And I love that. That's one of the biggest strengths, I think, that Alex Cora brings to the table here. You know, he's got tunnel vision, where he's not going to outthink himself. He's not trying to outsmart himself. He's not worrying about Thursday on Monday or Tuesday. And I feel like so many of these managers in Major League Baseball, especially the guy that used to be here in John Farrell, you know, those are the types of guys that are always worried about tomorrow and foregoing winning today. And I feel like that's a big reason why the Red Sox wrapped this thing up and won this thing in four games the way they did. It was a calculated risk that Cora took, and it wound up paying off and working for him. But when you compare that style that he had in that series against the Yankees, that tunnel vision, trying to win just the game at hand, you know, worrying about winning Game 3, worrying about winning Game 4, not worrying about what's going to happen if you lose Game 4 and who are you going to throw in Game 5, are you shooting yourself in the foot by pitching Sale out of the bullpen in Game 4, full well knowing there's a chance that he won't be able to go or go and be his very best in Game 5, and you may be forced to pitch, you know, David Price in that situation? He didn't get lost in the minutiae of thinking about that. He just worried about how do you win that game. So if you think like that in the Yankee series, you have to ask yourself, or at least I have to ask myself, looking at this ALCS against Houston, sure, Game 1, absolutely, you know, no-brainer. The way that Chris Sale's thrown the ball in the playoffs, he is your Game 1 starter, no questions asked, no second-guessing. He's earned it, he deserves it, and when he's right, he is still one of the best pitchers in baseball. I think it's a pretty even matchup with Verlander, right? There's no doubt about that. That's going to be a great, just a great baseball game, or at least it's setting up to where it should be a great baseball game. But Game 2, again, I understand the fundamental reasons why David Price is getting the ball in Game 2. And regardless of what Cora says about having found something, this tweak that Price can make, that Cora's found that he's going to suggest to David Price, make David Price make, that's going to essentially take David Price from the guy that we saw in Game 2 against the Yankees and return him to Cy Young David Price that we saw in that 10-game stretch post-All-Star break, whether that's true or false, knowing David Price's track record of consistent failure in the postseason, 0-10 as a starter, knowing how David Price imploded, absolutely imploded, there is no other word. He imploded. He was awful. One of the worst postseason performances in the history of this game in Game 2 against the Yankees, right? Does he really give the Red Sox the best chance to win Game 2 against Houston? See, I'm not sure he does, especially when you got great performances from Nathan Eovaldi and Rick Porcello. And hell, I mean, you could make an argument that Eduardo Rodriguez being a starter in Game 2 gives you a better chance to win than David Price does. Really, I mean, that's an argument worth making. That's an argument I would listen to, because not even Eduardo Rodriguez, who's been kind of bad at times in the playoffs here, you know, he's been sort of delegated to long mop-up duty when you got a 10-run lead. That's who he's become in this playoff series. I don't care. I mean, I still think that there's a higher likelihood of Eduardo Rodriguez giving you a positive performance where he goes 4 or 5 innings, gives up 3 or 4 runs, you know, walks a guy or two, has a couple of strikeouts, and at least keeps you within shouting distance. I feel like that's what E-Rod is, and I feel like that's who he'll always be, whether it's postseason or regular season, because at least he's not in his own head the way that David Price is. So does David Price really give this team their best chance to win game two? I don't know if he does, and the numbers tell me he doesn't, and the recent history tells me he doesn't, and the long history tells me he doesn't. Somehow, some way, Cora thinks he does, and I feel like that is Cora being caught up in playing the long game, which is exactly what he did not do in the series against the Yankees. And that scares me a bit because that tells me that Cora is getting away from what worked in that Yankee series. You know, that tunnel vision is what worked. That ability to have the need to only control that night. You want to win that game, control the outcome of the particular game in which you're playing in. That's how the Red Sox were able to defeat the Yankees. It really is. You know, he said, to hell with a potential game five, to hell with, you know, the situation where I might have to start David Price. He didn't worry about that. He just worried about getting out of game four, getting out of Yankee Stadium with a game victory and with a series victory, not worrying about tomorrow. But I feel like he's worrying about tomorrow just a little bit by pitching David Price in game two, because Alex Cora knows this, and I agree with him here. And here's what makes the situation so hard. You can't win a World Series. You probably can't even get out of the ALCS unless you get positive contributions from David Price. You just can't. He's too talented. He gets paid too much money, and he gives the Red Sox that much bigger of an unfair advantage if you somehow, some way, find a way to get David Price to revert back to form, give you regular season David Price, give you that post-All-Star break David Price. If somehow, some way, Cora can tap into that guy, if somehow, some way, Cora can find that guy and pitch that guy in game two, well, then suddenly everything changes for the remainder of the postseason. Because now you got yourself a weapon. Now you got yourself an unfair advantage that other teams don't have. You know, and whether that other team is, you know, the Astros, the Dodgers, the Brewers, any one of these remaining teams, if you somehow, some way get David Price back to the guy he was post-All-Star break, there's no other team that I think that can match up with Chris Sale, David Price when they're both right. You got two legit aces when they're both right. And I think that's what Cora's sort of caught up in doing here. He knows you can't win a World Series without David Price being the best version of David Price. And the only way to get him back there is to show confidence in him. The only way to get David Price back there, because he's so in his own head. He is such a mental midget. He is so psychologically damaged. You have to sort of put too much faith in him. You have to pat him on the back a few extra times. You have to show faith in him that, you know what, I trust you with the ball in game two. He's playing a mental game with David Price and trying to win this mental game with David Price, and maybe it'll pay off. Every other button that Cora's pushed has seemed to pay off. It seemed to be been the right move. But this one is a risky one, because I'm not sure that David Price gives the Boston Red Sox their best chance to win game two. That guy might be Nathan Eovaldi. That guy might be Rick Porcello. That guy could even be Eduardo Rodriguez. Arguments could be made for all three of those guys that they give the Red Sox a better chance, a better opportunity to come out of game two with a victory. But David Price, you get him right, you got a better chance to win a World Series. So he's caught up playing the long game instead of that tunnel vision that worked so well for him against the New York Yankees. It is Sports Radio WEI, it is late night. I am Patrick Gilroy. When we come back, we'll hear from Alex Cora right here on Sports Radio WEI. It is late night right here, Sports Radio WEI. Still room for you guys at 617-779-7937. Text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. And real quick, we will get right back to the Red Sox stuff, the David Price stuff, the Kimbrel stuff that's really dominated the program tonight, but I just got to get this off my chest. For those of you that didn't get an opportunity to see the Laker game tonight, it was LeBron James and his Lakers against the Golden State Warriors in Las Vegas. There were periods of the game that were great. They really for moments, they treated it like a regular game, a regular season game, even a playoff game. There was that kind of intensity, and I love that. And eventually it wound up becoming your traditional NBA preseason game, and the scrubs got in there. But for moments, it looked really, really good. And as a hoops junkie, I can't get enough good basketball. It's still weird for me, however, that Rajon Rondo not only plays for the Lakers, but he is now a teammate of LeBron James. And here's my problem, and it's going to take 10 seconds or less. If you didn't get an opportunity to see the start of this game, and you're a Celtics fan, and you hold the 2008 to 2012 Celtics dear and near to your heart the way that I do, and if you feel like Kevin Garnett is somebody that really did come into Boston and change everything here, completely changed the dynamic, brought Celtic pride back to the Celtics, then you're going to be sick over this. And it's just typical LeBron James. And this is why I hate the guy. It's why I can't stand him. I will admit that he is the best basketball player on the planet. He's even one hell of a guy. Dare I call him a gentleman? You know, he's never cheated on his wife that we know of. He's not a criminal that we know of. He's not like Sean Kemp. Doesn't have 27 children with 19 different women. He's not that type of guy. You know, put his own money in to help open a school. Quality human being. Cannot stand him personally. Can't do it. Makes me sick. One of the reasons why is ever since LeBron came into the league, I felt like he was always trying to be somebody that he's not. And he never came off as genuine to me. Every single thing he does seems calculated. Every move he makes seems like it's something that he's put too much thought into. He's never just a genuine guy. And I feel like you can see that through the camera. And for me, it's been a turnoff. You know, it started with his desire to be the next Michael Jordan, wearing number 23, trying to copy some of MJ's signature moves, when really Kobe was a lot closer to Jordan than LeBron is. LeBron should have molded his game more after Magic Johnson. He could have been so much better in that mold full time. But anyways, to start the game tonight, Rajon Rondo sort of kicked the ball, threw it through his legs, the way he used to do with Kevin Garnett. And you had this whole start to the game where LeBron gets the tip off, sort of looks like a football player, it looks like a back, and he throws the ball under his legs and gives it to Rajon Rondo. Rajon kicks it around. This is the Celtics' opening move. This is what Kevin Garnett did with Rajon Rondo. This was their thing. And now LeBron's copying KG as well. It just makes me sick. So if you didn't get a chance to see preseason basketball, and if you didn't watch it, I don't blame you. It's all over Twitter. It's all over the internet. And if you're a Celtics fan like me that holds that era near and dear to your heart, this is going to make you throw up in your mouth a little bit. And it's just another example of LeBron James being a fraud. It's another example of LeBron James having no idea who he really wants to be on the basketball court. Okay, it's off my chest. I don't have to watch it anymore. Don't have to talk about it anymore. It is Sports Radio, WEEI. We're talking Red Sox. Talking Red Sox-Yankees, still the aftermath of that series, and how what happened in that series with David Price, with Craig Kimbrell, how that can come back and bite the Red Sox in the ass against a superior opponent in the Houston Astros. Let's get right back out to the phone calls. Let's go to Rick. Rick's in Plymouth. Rick, you're next up here on WEEI.
How you doing? Let's talk about my favorite subject. You've heard this one before. David Price.
Let's do it, man.
Okay. Listen, by throwing David Price in game two, you are making game one a must win.
Yep.
You have to win this game. You lose this game, now you're relying on David Price just to even up the series. I would rather trade game four than trade game two, even if it's on the road and, as I like to call him, old puddle boy Price, there's going to be a 10-inch puddle around that mound, I'm telling you.
Rick, hear me out, too. I feel like an argument could be made that there's less pressure on David Price pitching in Houston, and I also feel like there's a controlled environment. They play in a dome. You don't have to worry about weather. Don't forget, David Price, when he pitches in the cold, he talks about his extremities, there's not enough blood flow, yada, 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 all that stuff that started the season. Well, he's going to be pitching, and it's supposed to be in the high 40s and drizzly, rainy, and chilly in Boston. He is setting himself up to fail.
Alex Cora is in a panic move right now, and I'm not used to seeing him in a panic move. He's been very forthright about everything he's done. I mean, as you said, he lives in the moment. He wants to win that game. Well, apparently he doesn't want to win game two. Look, if I have to say it out loud, David Price is a $32 million roll of toilet paper. I'm sorry.
He is.
The guy is an absolute waste of blood as far as, okay, fine. I don't know how to put this, but just the fact that pitching in game four is no guarantee, but at least, like you said, it's indoors. It's in a dome. It's down in Houston. It's warm weather. It's much more to his liking than it would be to pitch him up in Boston where it's cold, and he's going to make every excuse in the book. He's going to be out of there in six outs, and you're going to have to use up your bullpen.
I don't think it's a it's not a coincidence, Rick. When you look at David Price and you look at his career, especially as he started to get a little bit older, he had a great run when he was in Toronto. It is a controlled atmosphere. It's 68 degrees, zero humidity all the time because it's in a dome. He needs that. He needs to be in a controlled atmosphere. Anytime there's any built-in excuse, whether it's weather, whether it's it being cold outside, whether it's rain, whether it's allergies, fresh-cut grass, cats, he has mentioned it all. This isn't us piling on David Price. I'm just repeating the words that he's told us about the reasons why he struggles.
This is the same reason why Peyton Manning lasts as long as he did in Indy. He played indoors.
Yep.
I mean, he was an old man. He was dying. His arm was dying. He had neck injuries. Fine. He plays indoors. It's nice. It's beautiful. It's Indianapolis. It's not like every time you get to Foxborough, we folded like a house of cards, like David Price would if he was out there.
But, Rick, real quick here. Can the Red Sox win a World Series without a positive contribution from David Price?
I think they can win the World Series with David Price as long as he doesn't pitch games one or two. I would pitch him games three or four, not games one and two. I don't like the trade-off. Because one, now you're setting them up for two starts. I'd rather use them one start.
No, you're right about that. And I didn't even think that far ahead. Listen, Rick, I appreciate the phone call. I didn't even think that far ahead, but you're right. By pitching game two, there's a possibility there that you're setting them up for two starts. And that's twice that you sort of depend on David Price to come through. And he has never come through. So to have to depend on him twice in the ALCS, that is not ideal, considering, I don't know, the fact that he's 0 and forever in his Major League Baseball career as a postseason starter. It is Sports Radio, WEEI. It is late night. There's been a lot of talk about Alex Cora. Alex Cora really hit on everything from A to Z earlier today here on WEEI. And he talked about David Price, and he talked about his decision-making process when it comes to David Price and Price pitching in game two. You know, I love this about Alex Cora. I love the fact that he's open. I love the fact that he's honest. And I love the fact that he's able to have a dialogue and go back and forth with the guys here earlier today on WEEI.
You made a lot of decisions in this series, and it looks like just about every one of them worked in your favor. The one decision I think everybody would have made would be to go to Kimbrel in the ninth last night. So what were you thinking as the ninth inning unfolded?
He's our closer. You know, he's one of the best in the history of the game. And, you know, one thing I learned over this year is you manage all the way to the ninth inning, and if you have a lead and Craig is ready, you just sit back and enjoy the ride. And yesterday was a bumpy one, but, it was what, four runs before getting three outs. I had a feeling that was going to be tough to do, and although it wasn't pretty, well, he got the job done, and we move on.
And I know some of the advanced metrics and stuff that you talked about, it's not about righty lefty or history, and it's about strengths and weaknesses. But so you can see where the Holt comes out of the lineup and those other guys go in. But I'm curious about the Christian Vasquez one, because you hadn't caught Rick all year long. How much did Rick play into that deciding role, or did he just say, I don't care, play who you want?
No, it took a phone call, and it was after the game. I say, Rick, Christian is catching tomorrow. And he was, okay, cool. We went through the same thing in Cleveland. Blake caught him, and these guys are all in, and they understand that we're going to use different guys in different roles, and they're okay. You know, we got three good catchers, and it's about game planning and executing pitches, and he was fine with it, and we rolled with Christian.
So the other ones, the position players with Brock and Devers and the two righties, was it just what their strengths are, balls coming into them, pull side, and just thought maybe CC would keep the ball away from those lefties? What went into that, those decisions?
Yeah, in game three, it was a slider. He threw a lot against the A's in the wild card game. So we play in New York. Rafi, he's been putting good at-bats for a while, so we felt that a hanging slider, a hanging changeup, he can put one in the seats, and we know how Brock is swinging the bat. We didn't like the one with Tanaka as far as, like, expanding the zone with the split, so we stay away from that. We're at home. He can hang one, and we can hit one off the wall. But it felt right that day. regardless of the numbers, it was like 0 for 12 or 1 for 15. I think the swings and the usage helped us to make that decision, and I'm glad it worked.
You know a play that I think is, you're getting a lot of credit. The team's getting a lot of credit. I mean, New York's playing in the clubhouse. The play that really kind of stood out to me is Nunez's play at third base to end the game. It's 4-3. Wow. Torres tops a slow bouncer towards third, and Nunez. I saw the play happening in real time, but I actually saw it in slow motion because I was imagining all the things that could go wrong. I mean, can you tell us what you were thinking when that play happened? Here's your opportunity to end it, be done. Like, what was going through your mind when you saw it?
Now, me and Ron Reneke, our bench coach, we were talking about it throughout the day that we needed to probably make adjustments as far as like the defense with two strikes because, as you know, these guys, they hit a lot of fly balls. But with two strikes, we were going to spin the ball, and there were a lot of slow rollers throughout the game. And at that moment, you get caught up on the whole thing. You know, you're like, oh, God, you know, let's get this guy out. And we actually didn't move Nooney two steps up, you know, and we should have. But great reaction, didn't throw off balance. I was just watching the game, and you can see the transfer, and he got the seams right, and he made a good throw, and Pierce at first with a good stretch, and it was a great play. You know, Nunez, I know he got criticized early in the season because of his defense. The guy, he hasn't played that much second base, and it's not that easy going from short and third and move to the side of the diamond, and he struggled. But when he moved to third base, he feels a lot better. He has a good sense of the game, a good internal clock, and he's been playing good defense for us.
Is he okay physically?
I tell you tomorrow.
Okay.
I know he was limping and all that, but then in the clubhouse, it seems he was fine. He was jumping up and down and popping champagne and spraying people.
All right. You've announced your starting rotation. David Price is going to go number two. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Why pitch him in game two in a cold Fenway Park where the temperatures could be down to around 40 degrees, and he's had some difficulty in the past in cold weather, and not pitch him in three or four where you're going to be playing indoors and it's climate control?
No, I mean, I know that team. I know how that ballpark plays. I know the short porch. I know we have the big wall here, but I think those righties at Minute Maid, they make more sense than the lefties in Minute Maid Park or whatever they call it. Is that what it's called? Minute
Maid? I'm not even sure.
I think so. Yeah, it used to be Enron or something.
Keep on changing these things. You lose.
yeah.
You'll only be gone a year.
So the best way I could describe when you went, I saw Chris Sale go out to the bullpen and get loose, was it made me feel uncomfortable. Should have made me feel nice, right? Because it's Chris Sale, but I just had him locked in if you needed it. And what went into that mindset, as you said afterwards, you told the team you guys were all in, and was there concern it was only 13 pitches if you needed them moving forward, or even think about that?
No, there was a lot of thought. We were talking about the whole day, and I was actually thinking more up for bring him in because, as you know, in that ballpark, you walk or hitter, there's a bloop single, and then a pop up to right field is a home run, and then all of a sudden, it just, what are we going to do after that? We still had game five, so you got to think about that. You know, that's the luxury of being up 2-1. But talking to Dana and Ron, we talk about his health. We talk about everything that could go wrong. And Dana was like, I'm good with it. Ron was like, I'm good with it. I say, well, if that's the case, we're all in. And I let everybody know in the dugout that, hey, man, this is it right here. We're rolling with him. You know, we went five innings with Rick. So in the order that we usually do it, you know, the starter goes six, Brazier, Barnes, whatever order it is, and then Craig. So we went five. We used Barnsley against the big boys, then Brazier against the bottom part of the lineup. And we were one inning short, actually, and we went with him, and he did an outstanding job.
You know, when it comes to Kimbrel, I know you've touched on it before. When you see him – I guess I just look a little wild. How uneasy is that? Because at that point in time, everything you've done has worked. Sixth, seventh, and eighth, and here you go. You get your ninth inning guy. You get your closer. And yet he does not look like he has it.
Yeah, I think command was an issue yesterday. There were some good takes, too. I was watching the game just now, and we had Gary in an 0-2 count, and there were some good sliders that he took. And we haven't seen that in, what, 21 games, 22 games. So we'll take a look at it because maybe something was going on. I don't know if it was signs or just the quality of the pitch or just, you know, him – tipping the pitches, I don't know. But there were some good pitches that they took. Then at the end, he was able to elevate the fastball, which I think was a big pitch for us throughout the series. They didn't make an adjustment with it, and then he made a good pitch against Torres. But it's a little bit uncomfortable, of course. You know where we at, and it's not easy to go to Yankee Stadium and finish a series. I don't know. You know, like we went there last year as a team with the Astros, and we lost three in a row, and we felt that we had the best team in baseball. And for us to go there and finish it off the way we did, it was awesome. And you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, we got three outs before they score four runs, and that was the case. And we did a good job.
Speaking of tipping, as you know, once a tipper, always a tipper. And they had an interesting shot in Game 3, Jackie and Mookie in the top step, and Jackie uttered the words, fastball, fastball, when Severino threw one. I know it's the off season; you won't see him again for a while, but it seemed like someone had a little something on him.
I don't know.
And I know you, and I know Rags, so I know you're two of the best.
I don't know. I think it's amazing how now, and I play the game too, kind of like when one of the guys struggle, we look at the film and see if he's tipping. Man, sometimes it's just we're guessing, honestly, and He had good stuff, but I think we did a good job. Kind of like the way he pitched against Oakland was a little bit different compared to early in the season. He threw all those fastballs in the first inning, and then he abandoned the fastball. He started using his slider, and we took advantage of it. I think the hit and run was the one that changed the game, honestly, because first pitch fastball, base hit, first pitch hit and run. And it was first and second, like quick, you know. And I think, you know, with Severino, you have to be that way because his stuff is that good. But I don't know. I don't know if it was tipping or game planning. I know we did a good job staying in the zone, which was very important.
All right, let me ask.
There he is, Alex Cora, earlier today with the guys from OMF. And again, Alex Cora is the anti-Bill Belichick. Yeah, those are long, thought-out, thoughtful answers, and they legitimately provide a little bit of insight into his decision-making process. And look, he's made a lot of great decisions throughout the postseason. The first decision that I'm really questioning, and I feel like the first decision being widely questioned, was the one to go with David Price as the Game 2 starter. It is Sports Radio, WEI. It is Late Night. I am Patrick Gilroy. When we come back, we'll still have a little bit of time and just enough room for you guys at 617-779-7937. Final segment here, Late Night, Sports Radio, WEI. The full four-hour extravaganza here tonight. Thank you to everybody that called. You really helped carry the day. Also, a big thank you goes out to Dan Greenberg from Barstool Sports. You guys can find his stuff over there at barstool.com. You find him on Twitter, at Stool Greeny. He's now full-time over there, so if you're a Celtics guy like me, he's got the blogs flowing freely every single day with lots of good stuff. So check out Dan Greenberg on Twitter, at Stool Greeny. Still room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937. We'll get right back out to the calls here. Let's go to James. James is in Connecticut. James, you're next up here on WEI.
How you doing?
What's up, James?
So I wanted to call the other day when Lou was flipping out when we were 1-1 in the series, and I was literally going to say, listen, they're going to blow him out today, and then we're going to win a close game in Game 4. So this is my theory on this next series here.
It's James, you got a crystal ball over there, huh? I mean, not for nothing. You sort of nailed that.
Listen, I'm a genius.
All right.
So listen, Game 1, we're going to lose a tight game. Verlander... I think we'll lose something like 4-1, right?
Okay. I hope not.
It's a great game. Maybe six innings, two runs, but Verlander is going to take us. Price is going to pitch a gem. He's going to pitch 6 2/3. He's going to let up one run. He's going to win us game two and save us in the series.
So a must-win situation, a guy that's 0-10, he's going to come through.
He's going to come through. My wife's coming out to yell at me. I'm on the radio right now, babe, please.
All right, you work things out with you guys. Work things out. It's 2 a.m. I want to tell you this, James. It's 2 a.m. and only the world's greatest radio talents and only the smartest people work together at 2 a.m. So good on you. Get that crystal ball. Look, I hope you're wrong. To be honest with you, I want no part of the Red Sox losing game one. That's not ideal. That is not what we're looking for here. But hey, you were right the first time around. Who knows? Maybe you'll be right the second time around again. So now it's 2 a.m. So later on today. You got nothing to do, go over to Emerson College, okay? Check it out. It's the Cabaret Theater at Emerson College. You get your tickets at eventbrite.com. They're free. You just have to register there. There's going to be a little round table, a little Q&A with the kids from Emerson, future broadcasters, media people of America. Myself and Ben Volen, we're headlining the event. So head on over to eventbrite.com. Get your tickets. They're free if you got nothing else to do. That's from 7 to 9. Then I'll be back here again for more late-night action tomorrow night coming up at midnight following Thursday night football. So it's a double dip. Catch me at Emerson Live, then catch me here on the radio. What's better than double Gilroy? So until then, guys, I'll talk to you. Bye-bye. In a city that doesn't sleep. And find I'm king of the hill. Top of the heap. Little town blues are melting away.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.